Do you like bunnies, Tony? Do you like celebrating the life and death of Christ?
This is such a good Easter record.
It's so choice that it worked out this way. We are Direct2.video.
I didn't realize what you were doing. I didn't know if you were trying to start.
It's not normally my job.
VHS?
VHS.
It's a podcast where we pair movies like fine wine. We watched Watership Down on this, our Easter episode. It's not correct. Coming out for at least a calendar week, so.
But know that right now, at the time of recording, it is Easter.
It is Easter.
I think this is the closest I've gotten to celebrating Easter in, like, maybe 15 years. Maybe longer.
I read the book for this before I watched this movie, because I was, occasionally I'll sit around thinking to myself, I want to put on an audiobook and try to figure out what to listen to. And I listened to this, and it, as a book, it's, like, really solid. As a movie, it's, like, I want to blow your mind here. For some reason, the movie is, like, darker than the book.
Fascinating. That's very interesting.
I'll give you an example. As I was reading the book, I had been told that it's a telling of the Odyssey with rabbits.
Oh, that's fun.
Which is not really true, but it does take some Odyssey stuff. And so I thought, okay, Hazel's going to be the only one who survives and everybody else is going to die or get lost and it's going to be Hazel alone. That never happens. So I was sitting here, like, waiting for people to die, and they don't. No main character dies in the book Watership Down. In this movie, two main characters die. One of them is only introduced so she can die. She was not in the book.
Yeah. It's kind of wild how that happens.
Yeah. Also, this movie, the thing this movie does that feels dark is there are a couple scenes that both in the book and in the movie are, like, upsetting, almost, like, viscerally. And in the movie, they'll kind of do them very artistically, so, like, it's still upsetting, but there's a bit where a bunch of rabbits get massacred, okay? It's still upsetting, but there's, like, a level of removal because it's done in an artistic way. But also, if a rabbit gets hurt, he will be spewing blood from every part of his body. It's like, but why'd you do that, though?
It's very odd.
The least artistic way, almost. They just wanted to draw some blood.
It's almost like one of those things where, like the movie is a little too surreal for kids. Like, it's playing in, like, a realm of imagery and metaphor that as a child might find upsetting just because they don't understand it. On top of, like, two very genuinely upsetting scenes.
Oh, yeah. Maybe three genuinely upsetting scenes. There are some rabbit deaths in this movie that are, like, holy shit.
They're hardcore. And so it's, like, it's not really a movie for kids. But, like, as an adult, it's a little too, I don't know, ephemeral for me to really, like, I didn't really enjoy the movie. I thought it was fine. I don't know. I didn't, like, it didn't grab me.
I think I probably liked it better than you did, again, because I know the story already. And I was like, I could see where it kind of didn't work as an adaptation, but I was still like, this is pretty solid. Kind of the same way I think of, like, The Last Unicorn or something, where I'm like, I enjoy this because I like the book.
I have a huge question for you.
Yeah.
Why the fuck is it called Watership Down?
Okay, it is wild that they don't say this in the movie at all, but I kind of get it. Watership Down is the name of the hill.
Okay.
But it's the name.
It's a British name.
I believe it's
name,
the actual human name of that hill.
Okay.
The interesting thing about Watership Down from a British perspective is that it's all these, like, little hills and stuff and, like, these little patches of like forest and woods that nothing really happens on, but it's like, what if some crazy shit is happening on rabbit level? And for, like, you and me, it's just completely gone, like, foreign. Like, I don't know what any of that means.
Yeah.
This could be happening on Mars.
Over the course of this movie, I was just like, wait, but why is it called Watership Down? I always thought as a kid it was called Watership Down because of the boat. Because they take a boat there.
Me too. But in like chapter fucking six, they get to Watership Down, and the chapter is called Watership Down. And it's like, oh, okay. Okay, he thought of the title last, actually. He wrote the whole book, and then his editor told him they should call it Watership Down, because that's where they end up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it makes sense.
It makes sense, but, like, when you're watching the movie, there's no indication that that's what's happened.
So, Kahar, who I believe is the chief in the original Warren that they start in, voiced by Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof.
No way, really?
Yeah. Yes, that was Zero Mostel.
This is such a different role from Tevye.
It's such a different role. It's such a good pull. And then, obviously, Hazel, who's kind of the main character, sort of, voiced by John Hurt, the illustrious John Hurt, who, you know, most people, I think, probably remember from, like, Elephant Man or 1984, or the guy who sold wands in the Harry Potter movies.
According to this, David Lynch described him as, quote, simply the greatest actor in the world.
He's John Hurt. He's the guy who gets the alien bumping out of him in the Alien movies. Fucking awesome. So good.
Ah, shit, he was Caligula and I, Claudius.
Yeah, dude, he's great. He's in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, one of my favorite boring movies. Every other actor in this movie, I don't know who the fuck they are. They're just like, they're like British radio people, I think, yeah. From what I can tell.
And I don't think anybody is giving like a bad performance, I want to be clear. And it's probably partially because I don't know who they are. I'm so sick of modern casting in animated movies.
Right, where it's just like Chris Pratt going around being like, hey, I'm Garfield now. Isn't that wild? It's like, it's not wild. It's in fact the least wild thing that could have happened.
It's wild kind of that it keeps sliding off my brain and I forget that it happened. Is that normal?
You know, it would be a wild choice for Garfield. Sir Patrick Stewart. That'd be wild. I would be losing my mind. But Jonathan, I do hate Mondays. Awesome. Great. Give me that.
I do love the idea that he calls him Jonathan every time.
So this is a thing that blew my mind. We're going to talk about this movie eventually. They did remake it.
I think there's like a TV series.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a BBC remake that was also done by Netflix. So it's kind of like a co-production that it aired on BBC, but then aired in the States on Netflix. And that was in 2018. And I don't know. I don't think I heard anything about it at the time.
Me neither. Definitely not.
People at the time were like, it's way more like the books than like the movie.
That's probably cool. I would love more Ella Rara. Ella Rara is not in this film enough. He's like a trickster rabbit guy.
Oh,
he's cool as hell.
Oh, I didn't know that he was even like a part of it. Because in this, he's just in the beginning, right?
He's just in the beginning. But in the book, Ella Rara is the subject of like every rabbit story.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So when rabbits gather around and tell stories, they tell stories of Ella Rara. To the point, is my understanding, that like if rabbits go out and like trick a fox, they tell that story like Ella Rara did it.
Oh, that's fun.
Because they're like, that's him. He blessed us in that time. Or like, we are clever enough because of him. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, because like when they go to the Warren that's like trapped, that has like traps all over the place.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That guy, that rabbit specifically is like, we don't like stories of Ella Rara here. And I was wondering if that was like a thing in the book. Or because in the movie, it's just a thing he says.
Yes, in the book, they tell a story of Ella Rara, and he says, oh, we don't like stories of Ella Rara here. And it's because Ella Rara is tricks people into not eating him, essentially. And the culture of that Warren has changed so much that if they even think about that idea, it upsets them because they know that they have traded not being eaten for like getting regular food. I love the animation on those guys because they all do like arm movements and stuff in a very non-rabbit way. And it's something that was just like said in the book, like, oh, this rabbit smiles like a human.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, because they're the thing that I think May thought was that, oh, their faces are all kind of melted. She thought that maybe they were like sick, like they had the plague.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be that like they've learned human mannerisms because humans are around them so often.
That's wild.
We should begin at the beginning.
We should begin at the beginning.
So in the beginning, the world was created by the god Frith. Frith is the sun. Don't overthink it.
It is just the sun.
I have a question. What do you think of this first like animated bit? Because it's different. It's an El Herrera story, and it's different from all the other animation.
I mean, I think it looks really good. It reminds me a lot of like those Soviet Rikki Tikki Tavi movies.
Okay.
Like, it has, like, I mean, this whole movie's animation is pretty, like, rough and, like, stilted, but in this section specifically, it feels like a, like, more of a storybook.
Yes, I think that's true.
It does feel, like, a little indigenous-coded, but I was chalking it up to, like, I don't know, maybe it's Celtic. I'm gonna say it's Celtic.
Could be Celtic. It did feel a little bit indigenous-coded to me, or, like, African-coded, and I was having a bit of a time with that, because there are very few books more British than Watership Down, which is not an insult to it.
No.
But it's like, when you're looking for a visual style, you should keep it grounded in that culture.
Yes.
But I always like having a distinctive style for like storytelling and then shifting it into a different style when it's not storytelling anymore.
Yeah, 110%.
My only issue is that they never go back to the style because they never tell any more El Herrera stories. This is a story about how rabbits are, like, fast and they have to, like, outsmart their enemies, and everybody is an enemy of the rabbit. El Herrera is called Prince of a Thousand Enemies, which I do love.
That's such a sick name.
It's so badass.
And I think also, like, The Running Prince or something like that, which is also really good. I love it when something has, like, a million names. It's good noun work.
And I love the idea that this is the story the rabbits tell themselves. Like, it used to be that everybody was in harmony, but there were too many rabbits. Like, that's part of the story, is there many rabbits because we're so good at reproducing.
We know.
That the god of everything decided everybody needed to try to eat us.
Well, the god, they asked first, right? They asked El Herrera, hey, can you like calm down?
He was like, nah.
Nah. Sorry, I'm too cool for that. I'm gonna show you like a screenshot of this remake. It's a very, they've made a choice. Yeah, but yeah, after that, we were introduced very briefly to Hazel and Fiverr, who are brothers, who are currently living in a warren, kind of in the lowlands of the UK.
And Fiverr has...
He has The Shining.
No, The Shining is actually talking to animals, I think.
No, that's... One, that's super not true.
Look, I only remember it from a interview with Stephen King. Fiverr has... I believe it's explicitly based off of, like, Cassandra.
Yeah, he can see the future.
He can see the future, but people don't really take him seriously. And he sees everything covered in blood and everyone dead. It's a bad day for Fiverr.
So this is what the 2018...
No!
Yeah, they've gone with that... that kind of like, I don't know how to describe it other than Tinkerbell-like CGI.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Now, I don't like that at all. This movie, it's very clear, even from this early on, this movie has a very low animation budget.
Yeah.
And what they mostly did is have completely still, like, paintings.
Well, like watercolor paintings.
Like watercolor paintings that the rabbits move around on. And do you know what, Andy? It looks fucking good.
It's gorgeous. Like, it's very pretty. It doesn't feel as, I don't know, like as expensive as like a similar Disney product. Like if I think about Bambi, which is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, right? But it's doing something like this, right? It's like doing one of these animal stories from the perspective of animals. But this has like a flavor to it.
the idea that you could use a cost-cutting measure, and when you in an animated movie, and when you release it, you would watch it as an audience and think, this is a style choice.
Yes.
This is a beautiful style choice.
Absolutely.
Oh, I know why most movies aren't like this, but this is a good choice for this movie. You can't do that anymore. Look at this terrible thing you sent me. The style choice they've made is not very good rabbits.
Yeah, I'm going to show you the, this is the 1999 animated series, which I think is the one you were thinking about.
This looks exactly like a 1999 animated series, I'll tell you what.
It's like a weird combination of like, it's like a PBS style, right? It's like Arthur almost, the way their faces look. Big Arthur energy.
They have given Big Wig way too much of a human face.
Right, yeah. And I assume that that's Fiverr down there.
I guess, unless it's the other little one. There's another little one whose name I can't remember.
God forgive me if I don't remember the names of any of the other rabbits. Because we don't really spend a lot of time, despite the fact that we are going to be following like these, so, I don't know, like seven or eight rabbits. Well, I think it's eight and then it's seven.
Six other, so it's eight, yeah. Seven. You don't need to learn about Violet. I didn't even know that her name was Violet until I looked on this Wikipedia page.
Oh, I knew her name was Violet. That is crazy that that happened. So rabbits live in warrens. This is going to sound a little bit like I'm reading off of Wikipedia until it doesn't. Rabbits live in warrens. And the way that the warrens are set up is they have kind of like a military hierarchy where rabbits join guards called, what are they called? They have a name. It's like a German name.
Ausla.
Ausla. The Ausla. And that's like the guard, but not all rabbits are part of that.
Right. So like there are some bigger ones that are part of the guard who are like a police force. They work for the leader called
the chief.
Do they just call him a chief?
Fine. Yeah, they just call him the chief.
I'm sure he has another name, but it's fine. They work for the chief. And yeah, it does seem vaguely military because they do try to arrest the other rabbits despite the fact that they're rabbits. And this really only matters, I feel like, to establish two baselines. The first baseline is, since this is how stuff works here, when they go off, when this small group is going to go off and try to establish a newborn, they're going to do it differently.
Correct.
And the other baseline is, this is a less than ideal military structure. Could it be worse? It could.
Oh, 110%. 110% it could be worse.
It could be worse in a very specific way. We get to learn about that later.
So Fiverr and Hazel and a bunch of others go to leave, but then they're intercepted by Bigwig, who is an officer.
Bigwig has just been fired because he let them talk to the chief, and the chief was like, how fucking dare you let these idiots talk to me? Because they said, hey, something terrible is going to happen, and he didn't believe them. Despite the fact, I feel like I should mention, because the movie doesn't make a big ham of it, but despite the fact that sometimes rabbits just can tell the future in this world. Well,
and one of the rabbits does say, every time Fiverr has had one of these visions, it's come true.
Yes, that's what I think probably Hazel says.
When they leave, we, the audience, finally get a look at this big wooden sign that they were looking at, which says that this like 50 or 50 acre structure or whatever is about to be like flattened for residential development.
And so we know, like, oh, Fiverr was right. And then we immediately leave.
Yeah, we're gone.
They're in the woods, you know, trying not to get killed. Violet, according to this, the group's only doe. Now,
that makes sense.
In the book, there were no does at all. They could, even if they wanted to, even if they knew some does who might come with them, does are guarded.
Yeah, they're basically like under... It seems to me like does in most of these places are under some kind of lock and key.
Super uncool, I think. And part of the point of this story, which again, they don't nail down in the movie version, is that when Hazel and the others go to establish Oboran, they don't do it like that.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
They do it. They try to be not shitty. But this is the only toe, and Violet gets got fucking immediately.
And Fiver watches this happen, doesn't say shit.
She just wanders out into the open with a hawk flying overhead, and it's like, guys, there are like six of you. Somebody should be watching.
Yeah, you shouldn't be allowing anybody to... You guys should have, like, had a discussion, like, all right, hey, if you're hungry or whatever, wait, like, wake someone else up. You gotta have a watch.
Bigwig is essentially military. Like, this should be normal for him. Anyway, she's killed. Rip to a real one. I'm just kidding. She doesn't exist.
She never speaks.
The others gotta keep going. They cross a river while being chased by a dog, and they end up in the first, like, big arc in the movie and the book.
Yeah.
Which is this new Oboran that immediately invites them in, despite the fact that, like, why? Why would you invite a bunch of new rabbits into your Oboran? They're like, oh, we have so much food. We have a bunch of empty areas. You can come on in. This, I was talking about the Odyssey, right? This is, I think, very clearly based on the Lotus Eaters.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of, like, you're on a journey and you found some place that looks safe and everything seems fine, but there's something weird about it. Yeah, you try to give Homer points, but I think this goes way harder than the Lotus Eaters.
Yeah, yeah, it really does, because Fiver kind of blows up at the kind of the leader of this Oboran, and runs off, and then Bigwig and Hazel chase after him, and they're like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Bigwig kind of, like, dunks on Fiver pretty hardcore here.
It's pretty good.
He's just like, oh, I'm getting visions. Oh, I'm so special. Everything's so happening now. It's like, holy shit, Bigwig.
Like, get him.
He's off, dude.
There is a good line that Fiver has that they don't give its due in this adaptation. He says to Hazel, they all think I'm crazy, but you know I'm not, and you're still not listening to me.
Yeah.
Which I think is fucking badass.
It's very good. It's kind of thrown away here.
It's kind of thrown away here, but so Fiverr's like, no, something bad's gonna happen. I'm gonna leave. And Hazel says, if you go out there on your own, you're gonna die. And Fiverr's like, you'll die first.
And then Bigwig yells out from the distance.
And he's like, fuck this, goodbye. Immediate.
Gets fucking snared.
Gets snared. This is such an intense scene. This is the one. I think that they go a little too hard on this because he's, like, bleeding from his mouth.
Yeah, he's getting strangled by the wire.
But even in the book, this was such a crazy intense scene. Like, I was like, shit, are they going to lose Bigwig? The only, like, military-coded guy? Like, the only one who could fight anybody?
Yeah.
He is choking to death. And they get all the others, but none of the, like, local rabbits come out to help. And it turns out they will get him free, but not before it really looks like he's dead. And sort of as a viewer, you're like, how did this rabbit recover from this? Because he's coughing up a lot of blood.
Yeah, he's... oh, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
And this is the point where I'm like, I'm not letting a child watch this. This is like...
Even earlier, I think even that hawk scene was like too upsetting. For me, like, and I was like, there's no reason for that to have happened because it's not in the original story. So why did they, like, bloody up this animated adaptation?
Yeah, I'm curious if there's any, if anyone knows why it was done this way.
But here's the secret about this Oboran is this is a Oboran where a man has decided that it would be easier than keeping rabbits in a hutch to just feed these wild rabbits and just occasionally catch them. And then these rabbits have kind of made the choice that it is easier for some of them to occasionally die so that they never have to go looking for food.
Yes.
But this makes them, like, low-key scared and upset and tell stories about the inevitability of death. And when newcomers show up, they invite them in without telling them anything because they want those guys to die first. It's really such a fucked up idea that I'm sure is based on, like, a real way that you can gather rabbit fur that people will probably say is, like, completely humane or a lot more humane than maybe keeping them in a hutch.
Yeah, but, yeah, like, but it's
still, like, deeply, deeply upsetting. Like, what if rabbits could think like we can? What would that be like?
Right, if they had an amount of intelligence, that them choosing to kind of be quislings to their own species is a little distressing. And it's very clear, the movie makes it pretty clear that, like, they are complicit, like, in entrapping other wild rabbits into their lifestyle just for the purposes of getting snared. Like, Fiverr says as much openly.
In the book, I just want to note that at this point, one of the other rabbits runs off with them because he fucking can't stand it anymore. And I just find it interesting that they don't include that guy. It doesn't make that big of a difference, but I don't know. I feel like it's kind of a redemptive idea that you can be in such a horrible situation and decide enough is enough.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen. Instead, they go on, I would say, a series of increasingly miserable adventures.
Well, what happens after this is they eventually make it to the hill. No. They run into the farm.
They do run into the farm. So this bothered me because I read the book. And in the book, they don't go to the farm until after they go to Watership Down. So I was like, why would he even chance this fucking farm? They know there's stuff on the farm that could kill them.
Well, because Hazel is horny as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He can hear those does that are being kept in the barn. He wants to have a chance.
So there are some does being kept in a hutch, and he wants to free them, but they're going to do it some other time because they get chased off by cats. Now they find Watership Down,
yeah, they
right?
get to water. After that is when they get to the down.
Oh, excuse me. In this version, they do run into Captain Holly first. Captain Holly tried to stop them from leaving the old Warren, and they threatened to kill him.
Yes.
And so they kind of know that he had been, like, chasing them at one point to maybe kill them, particularly Bigwig, because he's betrayed the chief. But Captain Holly shows up, and he is torn to fucking shreds. And they're like, holy shit, Holly, what happened?
When they encounter Captain Holly, at first...
love this.
Bigwig thinks it's the Black Rabbit calling him.
Thinks it's the Black Rabbit, which is too bad because they don't tell the Black Rabbit story in this.
Yeah, I didn't know what the fuck that meant, but Hazel walks up and he's just like, no, we can all hear that. That's something in the real world.
Yeah, that's not our Grim Reaper. There is a bit with the Black Rabbit in this movie that I think is cool as fuck.
It's honestly great. I think that's the highlight of the movie for me, is that scene.
But it's not this one. So Holly's like, oh my god, Bigwig, here's what happened. Everyone's dead. Here's this artistically stylized, but not in a way that makes it not horrible, depiction of what it would look like if you gassed a warrant.
I watched this and I immediately realized that I had in fact seen this movie, because the scene of the rabbits all, like, piled up
together and suffocating
and, like, clogging their own way out. I was like, oh, I've seen this. I remember seeing this as a kid and being freaked out. Because it's so visceral. It's so vivid.
It's very upsetting.
And then after that, he says that that the humans, like, tore up the earth and painted it red. And you're realizing, like, oh, they're like, turning over the ground, right, to get it ready for redevelopment. But, like, if there's rabbits under there, they're just getting chopped up and added to that.
The version in the book was, if anything, a little bit more hardcore, because they describe how, like, if some of the rabbits start getting out, how they'll, like, send the dogs after them or start shooting at them. I remember reading that and thinking, like, fucking why, man? Yeah. Like, that rabbit is leaving.
Yeah, why? What would you get out of this?
It does not want to live here anymore. There is, in this movie and the book, a sort of casual cruelty to the humans that is like feels indefensible.
the explanation, right? Because at first they're like they're doing this on purpose, but Holly, who was there, is like, it didn't feel like they hated us. It felt like we were just in the way.
Yeah, awful.
And it's like, yeah, and it's like, yeah, yeah, that's absolutely like
that's absolutely true. So they get to Watership Down, which is a big, nice hill that they can all live in. And then they can finally, like, relax, and they're safe now. We're about to introduce my favorite character.
Oh, okay. We're about to introduce my least favorite character.
This guy's great!
No, he sucks!
I think my issue is that he is better in the book because he's a little bit less cartoony. This version feels more like a parody of this person.
It feels like the fucking seagull from Balto.
That's so rude. For one thing, I feel like this is a big difference. Because of the way rabbits communicate with other animals, they have to use simplified language to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually speaks in what comes across as broken English, which I find more interesting than Boris's just heavy
Russian accent. He does also have a Russian accent, though.
He does. He does have a Russian accent, which suggests that when he goes over to Big Water.
I wanna apologize also. This was the act character that was voiced by Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof, was the sperm.
Oh yeah, was it? Awesome.
Yeah. Okay, it's so, way better, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I just want to mention my favorite line from him, and I'll stop fawning over this character. This is a line that happens quite a bit later, but I'm not going to give any spoilers by saying it. The rabbits come across something, and they say, "What is that?" And then he says, "Eat boat!"
Yeah.
Eat boat! Man makes it float on water!
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why he's yelling that line. He was, like, right next to them.
I do think the joke is that he yells because he's a seagull, and that's just what they do, and I guess that's funny. I think the thing for me, the part of the reason why this didn't work for me is, one, the movie doesn't make it clear that the reason why he's talking like this is because they don't speak the same language. And so instead, it kind of just feels like, out of nowhere, there is like a character from The Land Before Time here. Talking about big water and shit.
That is a good point, actually, because they don't, in the book, they establish like this language thing, like they try talking with mice and stuff, and it comes across like this.
Oh, yeah, but they fight rats very briefly in this, but it's kind of a montage.
Yeah, but this is the only character like that who like hangs around for a bit, so he's the memorable one. Kihar is his name.
Yeah, Kihar, because he has an injury in his wing, and so the rabbits are like, we're going to help him out, and we're going to like put the idea into his head to help us back.
This is the strangest change between the book and the movie. In the movie, the rabbits seem more
manipulative
about this situation, because in the book, they're like feeding him and helping him out, and they're like, "Hey man, we don't have any does. Could you look for does?" And he's like, "Oh, okay, I find does. Like, I find women."
Yeah.
So you got big, big baby, stuff like that.
Kihar got binder of women.
But in the movie, they're like, he's like, "We're children, we're women." And they're like, "Oh, we don't know, Kihar. I wonder what anybody could do about that." Like, they're like cunning about it in a way that feels like mean.
Yeah, it feels mean, but also it's like, I don't know, man. Like, you could just ask, right?
You could just ask. Why aren't we asking?
But yeah, Kihar's like, "You know what? I'm going to go fly out and help you guys look for does." But they eventually get tired of waiting for him. And so Hazel and...
What is the little rabbit's name?
Pipwick. And Blackberry. I remember Blackberry because I made a joke while watching the movie.
Well, I want to hear it.
Well, I don't... It was just, you know, you got to hang up on him.
Yikes. So Blackberry, the important thing about Blackberry that, again, is not very well established in the movie is that he is the smart one. He's like the Donnie of the group.
Yeah, he's the guy who figures out that wood can float. The movie doesn't really spend a lot of time on that, but
I was actually really disappointed that it didn't, because I made kind of a deal of it.
You made such a big deal out of it, and I was so excited for it. And then when it happened in the movie, I was like, man, Tony's going to be pissed.
Because they did this exact thing well in Secret of NIMH.
Yeah.
But then they just blow past all the stuff that I think they should be spending extra time on in this movie. That's my one big issue. So they go, they're gonna sneak the does out of the farm. It goes poorly. It goes slightly better in the book, by the way. This is miserable.
This is a fuck up of such a colossal nature that if I was Bigwig, I'd be like, Hazel's not in charge of things anymore. Because a thing that the movie doesn't address, even though it's kind of there, is that Hazel and Bigwig seem to be, like, switching off who the leader is, depending on the situation.
And it doesn't establish why Bigwig follows Hazel.
Why? I genuinely don't know.
It has been a little bit since I've read the book, and I'm muddled from... I believe Bigwig follows Hazel because Hazel... Early on, Bigwig did try to be leader, and Hazel refused to leave, like, the smaller rabbits behind and kept on making sure there were ways to get everybody safe. Mm-hmm. And it meant that Bigwig felt like he just knew what he was doing. And he was like, he was ready to be leader because he was the biggest. But here was somebody who was a better leader because he could look out for everybody.
Because he cared about everybody. Yeah.
Cared about everybody, and he like could figure out how to care for everybody. Bigwig, I will say, you, by the end of this movie, you could not claim that he does not care for everybody.
That's true.
He's a hardworking dude.
He's fucking doing the labor. So,
and this moment in the book is framed as like the moment when Hazel gets restless for no fucking reason and makes a big fuck up that happens to, because he was really lucky, get them two does. Okay? And then in this version, it doesn't frame it as, like, his big mistake. It just kind of frames it as a thing that happens. And also, he doesn't get any does. So it's like, yeah, why do they follow him? Seems like he made bad decisions.
He really does. So they fuck it up. I really thought Clover, at the very least, was going to go with them, because she makes such a big deal out of wanting to go.
She is, like... You ever play Persona?
Yeah.
You ever play Persona and you're just like talking to random people and one of them has a portrait, and so yeah, you're like, yeah, this person will be important 8 hours later.
Yeah, yeah. And
she's like that. Like, she's so coded as important to the story.
I'm gonna be real with you. I've spoken to all of my teachers and none of them have had a portrait except for you, so.
I guess we're dating later.
Or you're evil. Like, there's really,
or,
those are the
or
only
you're
options.
Evil. That's the other possibility.
In Persona, either they're date material or they're villain material. There's no in between.
Kind of villainous to be dating a high schooler, but we don't need to get into it.
Incredibly villainous, but yeah. So at this point, Hazel gets fucked up with the shotgun, and Blackberry and Pipwick make it back to the Warren. And as they are trying to explain to Fiver what happened, he goes mental.
Yes, and he has a cool-ass, essentially, vision quest.
Yeah,
where he follows what I believe is supposed to be the Black Rabbit.
Yes.
Although later at the end of the movie, I was like, was that supposed to be El Herrera this whole time? That doesn't make sense. But I think it's supposed to be the Black Rabbit. Like, he's following the Spectre of Death to Hazel. I love it.
In this kind of trip, the Spectre of Death is like flashing in and out, as if to imply, right? Like he's not dead, but he's dying.
But he's dying. And he's doing this thing because he's in that other animation style. He like doesn't move like the others do. One frame of animation. He's like an illustration of a rabbit floating across the sky. It's really cool.
I gotta say, if I had a friend, I think it's fucked up that Blackberry and Pipwick just kind of let him do this, because if I had a friend who I knew regularly had just like wild like acid trips, I would be like, okay, I'm gonna follow him and you go get everyone else.
Can I tell you, it's I don't want to keep harping on stuff like this, but in the book, Blackberry goes with him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it feels wild. It's like, that
yeah, obviously.
Fiverr is not big enough to do this on his own. That's the other thing about Fiverr, is he's a runt, right? Like, they never say it in the movie, but he's clearly...
He's one of the two that's, like, pretty freaking small. And he just can't do all the exercise that the others can. And he is important to the story and to this group because he's a fucking seer.
Wizard. Yeah.
Luckily for Fiverr and Hazel, Kihar happens to show up about this time. It's not clear why. I guess they just got really lucky. And Fiverr's like, Hazel's been shot. And Kihar's like, ah, it's full of rocks out? And he says, what? Yeah, did you pull the rocks out? It'll be fine if you get the rocks out.
Yeah, the rocks are the problem. It won't heal properly if you don't get the rocks out.
Right. And so Kihar goes down there and pulls all the, like, birdshot out of Hazel's thigh.
And while he's doing this, because he's doing it in between, like pecs and patooies, I was so tempted to make a joke that is, like, a year out of date at this point.
I mean, you can go for it. I'll cut it out if it's not funny.
Hawk Tua-ing the buckshot out of Hazel's leg. There we go. You just get rid of that.
Yeah, so, I'm just going to let it. I might just let it sit with the moment of silence.
He starts telling Fiverr, and finally everyone else shows up at this point to see what's going on. And so he starts telling Fiverr about the does that he saw nearby, but Holly recognizes the place he's describing as Ausla. No, the Ephrafa.
And Ausla, yeah, the Ausla's the other thing.
Yeah, the Ausla is there. The Ausla are the cops. The Ephrafa is the place.
Ephrafa is the place.
Or the people. It's the place and the people.
And he's like, nah, Ephrafa is bad. Don't go to Ephrafa. And spoiler, he's right.
They're the ones who fucked me up this bad, actually.
Pause. Actually, they didn't. In the movie, they did. Okay. But in the book, he's fucked up so bad because he came across those lotus eater rabbits. And he was like, have you seen Bigwig and Hazel? And they were like, get up. I think that's funny. And it's too bad that that bit wasn't kept.
That's really good.
You do what you can in order to make the spirit of the story work when you have 90 minutes to do it. So they're going to go to Ephrafa to get some does.
They learn about, from Holly, about one of the does who keeps trying to escape and keeps causing problems called Heisenflay. And so Bigwig tells Hazel, I'm going to go like infiltrate the group and you guys come up with a way for us to escape. And you guys being Hazel and everyone else.
So, it's not made clear in the movie, but I think it's still supposed to be true that this is Hazel's plan, but Bigwig is the one who has to do it, because he's the big one and the strong one.
Yeah.
One of the things that Bigwig does, because he's so tense about this idea, is he makes a fox chase him, and then runs into another group of rabbits by accident, and this turns out to be a bunch of Ausla officers, and they get fucked up by this fox.
Okay, I didn't know what was happening here.
Chaimi was like, what just happened? And I explained it because I'd read the book. And like, I was like, oh yeah, I know exactly what's happening because I know what's happening already. So that was not very strongly done.
But so he infiltrates the Ephrafans, and Hazel and everyone else like go over and they find a boat and they come up with like an escape plan. And they use Kihar as kind of like an in-between messenger.
Right.
And this is the point where Bigwig kind of becomes the main character up until the last like 10 minutes of the movie.
Bigwig does become, and this is true in the book too, Bigwig becomes the main character for like a solid third of it because it's like about these Nazis.
Yeah, they're Nazi rabbits. They're Nazi rabbits.
I would like to mention this about Ephrafa and about specifically their leader to General Woundwort. This book and movie are mostly about what if rabbits had to deal with rabbit issues, but they were intelligent like humans, and it's not supposed to be taken as, like, an allegory for any human thing.
Yeah.
But again, in, like, the last third of the book, the last, I don't know, fourth, the last quarter of the movie, they just start fighting Nazis. And it's not that I have a problem with it, it's... But tonally, it's a surprising shift from, like, the rest of this book to, like, actually fuck fascists.
I mean, I have to assume that this is this book was written by somebody who, like, lived through World War II in some capacity.
Yeah, it was, 100%.
And he just couldn't help himself. Kind of like how, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, right, like, watched, like, people in his, like, military company, like, drown in mud in World War One, and then in Lord of the Rings, you see, like, the orcs come out of the mud. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, are you trying to do something here, my man? And he's like, no, I'm not doing anything. Fuck you. It's just a fun story. I think even in the way the movie works out, at first you're like, well, they're just evil rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
But then the fact that they, like, scar each other to, like, identify each other, that's incredibly Nazi coded. The fact that Woundwort has, like, a blinded eye, that's incredibly Nazi coded.
He calls himself a general, and, like, yeah. Where the fuck else? That's not a rabbit thing.
Yeah, like, he was, like, one noun. He, like, I'm sure the guy who wrote the book, like, wrote Führer, and then was like, No.
Nah, it's fair is too much.
Let's go with General Woundwort. Because the other chief doesn't call himself general. He just calls himself chief.
Like we said earlier, they have an Ausla here, and the Ausla is worse. Like, instead of just having police, they have a police state. Like, there are certain times when you're allowed to go outside. Otherwise, you have to be, like, in the warren all huddled up. The officers can choose which female rabbits to sleep with, and nobody else can. Like, gross shit.
There's even a rabbit who is required who's required to show up when everybody leaves the warren and when everybody goes back into the warren, so that they can see how fucked up he is from trying to escape so many times.
Yeah, this is Blackavar. He's cool as hell. I really like him.
I have to say, he's so cool. And the movie disposes of him in a way that felt kind of pointless.
Yeah, so unnecessary. When, like, again, what I enjoy about Blackavar is that they eventually get him out, and he's, like, really clever and, like, good at being in a warren that's run well. Like, he just needed to not be under Nazi authority, and this guy will thrive even with no ears left. He's like a cool dude. So Bigwig hates this whole Blackavar situation. He hates being around all these Nazis, but he does end up meeting Heisenthal and tells her to gather a bunch of does together because they're going to make a break for it.
But when he goes to report this to Zihar, one of Woundwort's officers, I think Campion, sees him talking to the bird and reports it in.
And his cover's pretty good, that he was like, oh, I was trying to impress you by how not afraid of that bird I was. But the general doesn't believe it. And then Bigwig goes forward anyway with the plan. The bit where he gets Blackavar is so fucking cool. I love it so much. Because he just says, hey, we're, like, going out early or something. Or no, everybody's going inside. And the guard's like, what? Why? And he says, oh, look over there. You'll see why. And the guard looks over and sees the other rabbits escaping. And then immediately when that happens,
Bigwig's
already killing him. Like,
and Blackavar's like, all right, sick. Let's go.
So fucking, it's like a fucking Bugs Bunny move. It's so funny.
It's awesome. So they're making a break for it. It's starting to rain. But there's like, I don't know. Okay, this is the most frustrating part of the movie for me. He tells Kihar to meet him underneath the iron, or at the iron road, which is the railroad.
Yeah, the iron road.
And so all the rabbits are underneath the iron road.
Andy, can I tell you a secret about this one? It makes no fucking sense to me either. I don't think it was in the book. I don't know why this happens.
Kehar shows up on top of the Iron Road, and they're like fucking two ships in the night for some fucking reason.
Yeah, they're like, where's Kehar? And Kehar's just eating some bugs, like waiting for him. Like,
and he's like, where are bunnies? I don't know. And it's like, I'm losing my mind.
I don't know why this happens. It's so strange. And like,
utterly arbitrary.
Why are they even waiting? They know to go down to the river. Like, yeah, they want Kehar to show them exactly where, but like, it's anywhere's got to be better than waiting.
Right, exactly. But no, instead they wait a really long fucking time.
Like, they essentially wait to get caught.
I need to roll back a little bit, right? Yeah. I need to roll back a little bit. When Captain Holly is describing his escape from the Ausla. Whatever the fuck it's called. He says that he was crossing the Iron Road and then he heard a noise and he doesn't know what happened to the people who were chasing him. But then we watch it happen and it's like, oh, these two bunnies got fucking dusted by a train.
They did. They super did.
And so he is like, yeah, I don't know what, I was being chased and then I heard a loud noise and then I turned around and they were gone.
This story is great. I feel like it should have been played up a little bit more because he calls it Frith's messenger. And in the book, I think he said, everybody was like, oh, you got saved by Frith. And he was like, I'm not sure that I would have rather just not been saved. Like, he was like, it was so scary, guys.
It was, dude, guys, you don't realize it, but it fucking sucked. It was so loud.
So bad. It was so loud and so bright, guys. Trains suck.
Yeah, if it was, I would rather he did nothing, right? If this is what it means to be saved by the god of the sun. So, but I thought, I was like, they're talking so much about this Iron Road and so much of this plan revolves around the Iron Road. I thought something else was going to happen there, but no.
But no, nothing happens there. It's because for some reason they don't put the focus on the boat like they did in the book. On the, like, the idea that using a boat is a galaxy brain concept for these rabbits.
Eventually, Woundwar and all of his officers catch up to them, and Woundwar's like, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah, he's like, all the does can go back, but I am going to kill you, Bigwig, explicitly.
And Bigwig's like, you'll have to catch us first. And then he goes to attack Woundwar, but then Kehar attacks Woundwar from above at the same time as a lightning strike.
So good.
All of Woundwar's officers like flip and they retreat.
And the rabbits get down to the river and Woundwar and whatever rest of his officers he still has get down there. They have no idea what's happening. Like, it's, again, it's my favorite bit that unless you're the rabbit who's explicitly figured out boats, even the fact that they're climbing onto this boat means nothing to you. Like, he's like, you have nowhere to go when they're on a boat. Like, he just can't figure it out.
In the movie, they have to, like, encourage the does to jump on.
Yes. Because they're like, what does this mean?
And they're like, it's fine. Don't think about it. Yeah. They cut the line. They jump onto the boat. They float away. And Woundwort's like, what the fuck?
He, like, doesn't get it. They can't get it. It's, again, it's my favorite thing. I wish it was done better.
So then they float down the river. Kehar says his goodbyes. And everybody goes to the watership. And and we're done, right? You know, they live happily ever after. We've escaped.
This was so late in the movie that I did wonder if they were going to live happily ever after. I was like, is there enough time for the scene that I know comes next?
Well, and sure enough, there kind of is because,
I will say this next big scene, they hit all the hallmarks of it. They do all the big stuff and I didn't think they were going to be able to, but man, they sure killed a lot of rabbits.
Oh God. So many rabbits die. I think like 5 rabbits die is because they live on top of this hill. They can see from like a mile away that like Woundwort is coming to attack them.
Hazel does like a parlay.
Yeah, he does.
He like goes over to Woundwort and tries to like set terms. And basically what he says is, it's actually a bad idea if you're a good leader to act like this. Yeah. And Moonlord says, I'm going to kill you, and especially your leader, Bigwig. And Hazel decides not to correct him on this, which is a good idea, I think.
Correct.
So he goes back and he's like, yeah, they're going to kill us. They like fill it up so there's no entrance for them to use except for like they'll have to dig their way through one. Sort of like in Infinity War when they open up a little bit of the force field so everybody has to come through it.
Yeah.
This is basically just like Infinity War.
It's like that. I think it's a little more, interesting than in Infinity War. But then Fiverr starts losing his mind.
Fiverr starts losing his mind. And he keeps saying, there's a dog loose in the woods. There's a dog loose in the woods. And Hazel's like, I know what to do. And he takes, it's him and Blackberry and one other person. Oh, it's,
Pipwick. It's him, Blackberry.
It's Heisenfley, isn't it?
Yeah, and Heisenfley, yeah.
Heisenfley. I'm looking at this name. This is the most difficult to say name. Heisenfley.
Why can't they just have normal names? Why can't they just be all be called fucking like Birch and shit?
Because they're all fast. They go to
they set up a relay system between
such a good idea.
Right. Between the watership and the farm. And Hazel gets to the farm and he's like, I'm gonna free the dog. And that's the plan. And then they're going to trade off.
They need to lead the dog up to watership down.
Yeah, leading the dog back to the watership. This is, I believe, what in Star Wars Episode One, the Phantom Menace is called the Phantom Always the a Opera. Bigger Fish Gambit. Did I say Phantom of the Opera?
No, but you said Phantom, and I had to finish it.
Phantom of the Menace.
Phantom of the Menace. He does. That's a good point. They're essentially getting a bigger fish. It's not a terrible idea because they figured out birds work. Meanwhile, Bigwig is essentially the last military person who can defend the Warren in time for whatever Hazel's got planned.
So,
and
this plan.
He, at one point, buries himself. I love that. Buries himself so he can grab at the general's neck.
Yeah.
And they're fighting. They're, like, pretty evenly matched, but he's been taking a real beating, and the general has a bunch of big-ass rabbits on his side. But they're the only ones that could fight because they're in such a tight little tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a bit that, again, this is one of my favorite lines from the book, and I wish it had done a little bit better in the movie, Wundbert says, why don't you just give up? You can't win. And Bigwig says, my chief told me I couldn't give up. And for some reason, they cut basically here in the movie. But in the book, this freaks Wundwort the fuck out. Because he's like, your chief? Like, he just almost died against this rabbit. And he thinks there's another bigger rabbit back there ready to kick his ass.
Yeah, because in his mind, that's how the power structure works.
Yeah, I love that. And he's not entirely wrong because he's about to get so got.
Dude. All right. So earlier, while they're all trying to dig into the war, and one of the general's officers is like, man, don't you remember that like lightning bird who helped them out? And also that big animal that carried them down the river?
Yes!
Maybe we should just leave.
Yeah, he was like, there's this bird that turned into lightning and then whatever dragged them into the river. And I was like, that's cool. That's badass.
And then obviously Woundwort's like, you shut the fuck up. Never talk like that again or I'll kill you myself. And I only bring this up because those two rabbits are the first ones to die.
Those poor rabbits.
Because Bob, the dog, I'm pretty sure the dog's name is Bob.
I do want to mention something here about Fiverr. In the book, Fiverr goes into such a fit during this fight that it looks like he dies. And just before the dog shows up, he suddenly sits up and spooks the fuck out of all the big rabbits and says, I'm so sorry for what's about to happen.
Yo, they should have done that.
Why didn't they keep that in? That's so cool. Anyway, and then
then fucking this Rottweiler shows up and on screen murders like five rabbits. Just tears them in half. it's brutal. A Wound War and Bigwig also fucked up at this point from all of their fighting. It's nasty. Uh-huh. It looks nasty. They're like dripping. It's gross. And Wound War goes outside to see what's going on.
We haven't really hammered this in. There's so much blood in this movie. It's like crazy.
And it's like bright red. Couldn't be anything but blood.
Yeah. And it's always like streaming down their faces and backs. Like so much blood. Anyway, that's what they look like. And then the Wound War goes out and he's like, dogs aren't tough. You can fight a dog.
This is the wildest thing. This is insane to me that this is how this motherfucker goes out. He jumps at the dog and it like fades to the sun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that motherfucker jumped into that dog's stomach.
But they never found his body, so maybe he's still around.
Yeah, I guess.
That dude's fucking dead.
He's super not. No one in the history of film has ever been more dead than this guy. He tried to fight a Rottweiler.
That's the thing that happened in the book, too, which is like this idea that on some level, Woundwort was such a big deal and they never found his body. So he kind of lived on in the minds of certain rabbits. And I was like, if I were Hazel, I would have run such a campaign of this guy is dog shit now.
Yeah, this guy is that pile of dog shit that was that the next day, that was him.
You wouldn't believe how dead this man is.
He is like digested, guys. But no, instead they like turn him into a boogeyman, sort of.
Yeah.
And the narrator points out that Woundwort would have probably loved that, which makes me hate it even more.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. How dare you? At this point, by the way, a little bit earlier, I just want to mention, I forget if it was Blackavar or Captain Holly. Because it was somebody with a really fucked up hair. Yeah, Blackavar dies for no goddamn reason.
Yeah, Blackavar just decides to sacrifice himself for what seems like no reason, because Woundwort just kills him in like two hits.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything. He just
it's rough.
And I hated that because I was like, why you gotta do him so bad?
Yeah, why you gotta do him dirty? I thought maybe he would at the very least like there would have been like words exchanged or something, but no, he just dies.
Or, like, he gets him in the other eye or something, you know? Anyway.
This ending pisses me off.
I'm looking at this Wikipedia page, and I don't think I understood their interpretation of the end of this movie. So, why don't you say what the ending is, and I will be dumbfounded.
I'm looking at this, and this is exactly what I thought happened, is what they described.
There is a large difference. There's a what I think of as a very important difference between the book and the movie once again.
Yeah, a canyon.
Well, so it does the same thing. It's several years later. They kind of give you an overview of what has happened. But the general idea is Watership Down as an experiment is working. Like, it's a Boren that is run differently and run well. And everybody's pretty happy. And there isn't very much that can, like, attack them here. And Hazel is old now, and he's about to pass away, and he is visited by El Herrera. But in this movie, it's the Black Rabbit.
It's the Black Rabbit.
And I don't know why in the world they would change that, except that El Herrera was not in this movie at all.
Yeah, because we get the whole scene with the Black Rabbit with Fiver. And so at the end here, the Black Rabbit shows up and is like, hey, Hazel, it's time to die. And Hazel's like, I can't leave yet. I have to protect Watership Down. And the rabbit's like, no, you don't. They're going to be fine. It's time for you to go. And so he lies down, dies in a very realistic way. And then his like spirit.
Upsettingly realistic, actually.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah. Like I've seen animals die. This is exactly how they do it. And like, then his spirit jumps out of his body. He follows the Black Rabbit all the way into the sun. And then the movie ends. And I hate this ending because it's like, well, what the fuck happened to everyone else? What happened to Bigwig? What happened to Fiver? Like in this movie, Fiver has his fit. And then we never see him
again. We never see him again. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What happened to Eisenflay?
Fiver has a bunch of weird kids. It's the short answer, I believe.
No, he has a bunch of weird-ass kids.
He has a bunch of weird magic kids. It's one of the things that El Herrera says is that, like, your Morin will be fine. It has a bunch of people who can look out for danger. But, like, yeah, it is weird because this is essentially the same ending, but with all the, like, wrap-up of it taken out. It's like, what if the end of Lord of the Rings was just Frodo getting on a boat. Where'd everybody go? Is everybody okay still?
Like, it really feels, and I guess this is like my feeling of the whole movie. Mm-hmm. This whole movie feel one, if I didn't know that this was based on a book, I would know that this was based on a book because the pacing of this movie is so fucking wild that it can only be described as like, we adapted a book, but instead of rewriting it, we just decided to do like the Cliff Notes highlights of the book.
It does feel like the Cliff Notes version of the book. Like, what are the big important things that happen in this book? The bird, those rabbits that are weird, the other rabbits that are Nazis. All right, we got it.
Like, we got it. Feels, it makes the whole movie feel like unfinished and rushed and cheaper than it already, like it's, unfortunately, because of the animation style looks good, but it makes the animation style feel cheaper than it is because it's so unfinished. And it's like, I don't know, like you guys should have rewritten it more, made it a more coherent story. If you're going to cut this much out, you should have cut more and done more writing. And instead, it feels like you just took like your favorite parts of the book and animated them. And this ending is like so bad for what is in there because it's like, one, we don't really know much outside of the world other than these rabbits, but we only get Hazel's, like, I don't know, it feels bad.
Whoa, what the hell did you just do?
Why?
You spiked the most that any human being has ever spiked on a microphone.
Yeah, I don't know what I did. I was just stretching. I must have, like, pushed the mic on my, like, neck or something.
So, you must have. It was bad.
Okay, I'll re-say that sentence if you I just sounded like a fucking truck dying. So, yeah, it sucks that, like, we only get Hazel's wrap-up because it's like, what happened to everyone else? We only had, like, 5 characters in this movie.
Yeah, everybody else should get a wrap-up, really.
And it's not a long movie. It is a 92-minute flick, which is almost perfect.
It's genuinely, like, for the amount of stuff that happens in this movie, it's actually, like, a really good number because it's, like, it's actually surprising. There's no, like, boring bits. I do think I do think that sometimes the movie feels empty because it doesn't bother to explain stuff or, like, hang out in a scene. But there will never be a bit where you're like, oh, this is dragging on because it's gotta move.
Yeah. But again, it does mean that the pacing of this movie is, like, wildly all over the place.
I didn't hate it. I'm not sure. It definitely deserves its reputation as, like, too fucking scary for children.
Yes, 110%.
On the other hand, it's, like, a really well-rated movie, and I'm not sure it exactly deserves that either. I think what happened is that people watched it as a kid were really fucked up on it, and then, like, out of curiosity, watched it as an adult, and were like, oh, this is, like, surprisingly competently made. But because comparing it to what they thought as a kid.
110%. I think if you were a kid who watched this movie and it really hit for you, like it worked for you, I can imagine never being really satisfied by media ever again. Right? Like, I get it. Like, if this really worked for you, I'm sorry, because, like, nothing... Yeah, there's nothing like this. It's a combination of, like, budget constraints and incompetence that made it what it is. And competence, I should say, like, incompetence as an adaptation, but, like, a lot of competence in terms of, like, animation. Like, they had a vision. They just didn't do a good job. It made me really grateful for, like, all the work that Disney puts into rewriting these stories to make them, like, a film and not just, like, an adaptation.
I think I will forever defend cheap animated movies that go out of their way to not look terrible.
Like, yes.
This is a really cheap movie that I think you can watch without ever having the feeling that I had when we watched fucking Timmy's Big Adventure or whatever awful shit we just watched, or like a Swan Princess movie where it's like, oh, we just stopped putting animation budget into this 2 minutes in.
There's a passion. It's
got like a style too. It's like, if we do it with this style, we can do it cheap and it's not going to look like a fucking Disney movie, but it's going to look like a movie all the way through.
Yeah. So like, I definitely like didn't like the movie. Like, I just don't think there's enough there for it to be a movie, but I definitely like, I can understand somebody watching this and it like defining a large portion of their childhood. And I think it's, it definitely deserves its place in the pantheon of weird, fucked up movies kids get into.
Thank you for listening to Direct to Video VHS. I have been your host, Tony Rubisto.
And I have been your host, Andy Reyes.
You can find me at on the internet, inspiredbytruerumus.org, or you can contact me, mail at direct2.video.
You can find me on the internet, as well as on YouTube at Ethical Games Journalism, where we have gone back. We finally, it happened. I got my new capture card, and we are playing through the Wii, every game on the Wii in release order. We just uploaded, I believe, GT Pro Series and Happy Feet. So you can enjoy those.
Those sound like pretty different games.
It's a wild time. I'm happy that we're doing it again because it's so much fun. And then we should be starting up on, we will be playing all of Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, I believe, starting next week. So hopefully that doesn't take too long. But
all right, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
And thank you to Scott Buckley for Homeward, which should be playing about now. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think we're watching next time?
Oh, gosh. Is it Plague Dogs? It's Plague Dogs, isn't it?
The Plague Dogs, which is the next movie by the same team. Based on a book written by the same guy.
Same author. The Plague Dogs. This one I've never read, so I'll just watch the movie, I think.
I gotta say, as a guy who I was fucking so into Jack London's White Fang and Call of the Wild, I'm surprised I never read this.
I bet you this is better than White Fang and Call of the Wild, at least for a kid, because those aren't actually kids' books, but we have kids read them.
They are not kids' books.
They are somewhere between really fucked up and really boring as a kid to read through.
I really liked them, but again, I'm not. What I was into as a child is like not conducive to like what is good for children in general.
I just remember trying to read White Fang, and I was reading a scene that should have been exciting. That was all these men dying, being killed by wolves. And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Who cares?
Who cares? I also have a weird thing that I believe about Jack London books as an adult. This is going to sound so silly. I find them unreadable because he doesn't use the word said.
Yeah, he's very weird like that. He definitely doesn't like using it.
I don't know if it's that it was like popular at the time to like always say replied or voiced or shouted.
I think it comes from the fact that he's like a journalist.
Maybe, but he doesn't say said, and I learned in like all of my writing classes, you say said because that's not an important word, and it doesn't need to jump out of the sentence every time. You don't need to change the word. You can just say said a million times in a row because everybody gets it.
Yeah, he's such a weird dude. He's such a weird dude. He did some like weird fiction short stories and stuff as well, and if you can get your hands on them, they're pretty good. Yeah, he's such a weird guy. I definitely think it comes from the fact that as a journalist, he was only allowed to use the word said. And so in his short stories, he was like, I'm free of the burden of saying that somebody said something. Now they can ejaculate it.
That's obviously the worst one. Sherlock Holmes and Watson ejaculating at each other all day.
All day.
All day. End this episode, please. I'm the ghost, Sean Smith.
Down here for us rabbits, we have our own story of how Earth was made by rabbits.
I had a moment where I asked you to end the episode and then remembered that was my job by rabbits.